Copernican Theory by Sinistrated. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. "Please, don't hurt me," he whispers. Winona Kirk looks surprisingly put together considering the circumstances. Her blonde hair streaked with gray spills down in loose waves over the bright orange of her jumpsuit, moving like a curtain as she tilts her head and blinks through the monitor. Spock takes a breath, stills the too rapid beat of his heart, and lifts his hand in the ta'al. "Greetings, I am Spock." Winona smiles, warm with understanding. "Jim's told me about you." McCoy chokes on his coffee.
What? You want a what?
Spock cocks his head. "I wish to court the captain," he repeats.
"You have got to be kidding me."
Jim turns back to look at him, blue eyes bright in the half-darkness of the room. His grip around the wine glass is tentative, unsure.
"What do you want, Spock?" he asks,
with an uncertainty in his voice Spock has never heard. Spock swallows, summons his courage, and places a hand on Jim's thigh. "I wouldn't worry about McCoy," Neota says, folding her legs beneath her as she sits on the bed. "And you probably shouldn't follow his advice anyway, seeing as all he has to go on are the captain's random hookups at the academy."
Spock frowns. "I seek a relationship with Jim that goes beyond a mere hookup."
Neota smiles at him soft. "I know that," she answers, "which is why you should probably woo Kirk the old-fashioned way. You know, gifts, compliments, private candlelit dinners, that sort of thing."
Spock tilts his head. "That is not how we began our relationship," he says.
Neota's smile turns wistful. "No," and that actually explains a lot. He wakes with the pounding in his head and half-dried blood matted in his hair. Spock groans and pushes himself up to a sitting position, glancing around his darkened quarters.
"Jim," he calls.
But there is no answer. Jim is gone.
"I wish to know about Kodos," Spock says,
and the smile drops from Winona's face like a stone. The transformation happens right on the screen before him. The hardening of the eyes, the set of the jaw. There is a fury there, painted across her face, drawing her features tight like a bowstring, just waiting to snap. And for an instant, Spock can see it. The wildness, the dark instinct. He sees the mother. He sees the murderer.
"He thought he could hide from me," Winona whispers then. It's a hiss, reptilian, venomous, deadly. "He thought the Federation could protect him after what he did."
For just an instant, the humanity in her eyes flickers, fleeting, false. Her voice drops.
"He thought wrong."
"Look," McCoy says, waving his fork over his salad, "it's not that I don't, you know, approve or whatever. God knows why, but Jim actually likes you. And even though it makes me want to vomit, you two would be good for each other. Anyone could see that." He pauses for a moment. Spock just watches him, fingers wrapped around the mug of tea. Around them, the mess hall buzzes with its usual concerto of laughter, gossip, and clinking utensils. Then McCoy sighs and sets his fork down.
"It's just, Jim doesn't do relationships. Fucked if I know why. But all the time we roomed together, whenever someone even hinted at wanting to get serious, he'd bail like his ass was on fire. This guy who was over one time, he made some sort of comment about how Jim's eyes were real pretty or something like that, and Jim kicked him out so fast he probably got whiplash."
Spock tilts his head. Are you implying that the captain is not interested in a committed relationship?
No, McCoy sighs. I'm saying he's terrified.
Pike scrubs a tired hand over his face. Even in the bright light of the San Francisco sun filtering through his office window, he still looks drawn, stressed, old. Those files are sealed, Spock, he says, voice slightly distorted by time and light years. Even someone with your skills won't be able to get into them. Everything to do with Tarsus IV was locked up and signed away by someone with a lot more clout than me. Spock nods, projecting a calm he does not feel. That is understandable. However, my request for these files is in regards to the captain's health. Surely, in such circumstances, no. Pike glances away briefly, then back. Even that isn't enough. But, sir, but nothing. End of discussion, Commander.
Spock swallows.
Beneath the table, out of sight of judgmental eyes, his hands tremble. He cannot make them stop. He can still feel the bones of Jim's wrists beneath his fingers, slender and fragile. Something inside him is cracked, breaking.
The captain.
The last syllable falters. Spock clears his throat but cannot look at Pike. Jim is distressed.
And I am also distressed.
Brief silence. Spock calls on all his logic and Vulcan control, trying to will the storm of roiling, noxious emotion into some semblance of order in his head. He fails. Then at last Pike sighs.
The Tarsus files are sealed, he says, but some related documents aren't, like the records on Winona Kirk.
That surprises Spock enough to look up. When he does, Pike is watching him, expression a mix of resignation and warning.
You're very, very lucky I love that kid as much as I do, Pike says, and ends the transmission.
Captain, Spock says, just as Jim reaches for his knight, I wish to express my opinion that you possess very aesthetically pleasing features.
Jim freezes. What?
Furthermore, Spock continues, your eyes often remind me of the San Francisco Bay in the height of a summer afternoon. The color is quite agreeable.
It is strange saying such things. The words spill awkward and new from his lips.
Were he courting a Vulcan, such banalities would be unnecessary, but compliments are a regular component of human courtship rituals, and Spock wishes to do this right. Jim deserves it. Jim deserves everything.
Hovering above the chessboard, Jim's fingers twitch. Something guarded slips into his expression.
It's fleeting, gone the next instant, but Spock catches it with a jolt of disorientation. Has he done something wrong?
Nyota had assured him many humans respond positively to compliments regarding their appearance.
I apologize, Captain, if I have made you uncomfortable.
What?
No, Jim shakes his head and laughs a little nervously. Spock can't help but think the way his gaze darts about the room isn't so much a form of distraction as a way to establish the location of all the exits.
Then Jim looks back at him and smiles.
Spock thinks it seems a little false, but he has never been good at reading human expressions.
No.
Jim repeats. It's fine.
Thank you, Spock. That's very kind of you.
They continue with the game. Jim loses, which is another surprise, considering how atrociously Spock played. McCoy sighs and rubs a hand over his jaw, lined with stubble. There are shadows beneath his eyes.
He's okay, the doctor says, as sick bay hums around them.
For now, at least. I gave him a sedative after he ran in here and basically had a panic attack right in the middle of the room. Spock nods, trying and failing not to slide his gaze past McCoy's shoulder to the biobed in the corner where a single small figure lies unmoving beneath the white sheets. He wants to go to Jim. He wants to run away. His head hurts. McCoy hums and fishes in his pocket for a tricorder. "We should get that patched up," he says, indicating the blood in Spock's hair. "Wouldn't want you to do something stupid like bleed to death before you and Jim have a chance to resolve this mess." "What did I do wrong?" The question surprises them both. McCoy stares. Spock clears his throat and looks away, but finds he cannot rid himself of the question. His focus has scattered like particles into space. "I cannot identify any negative behavior I could have engaged in to prompt such a violent response from Jim." McCoy lets out a breath. "Yeah," he says, and runs a hand backwards through his hair. "Remember what I said before, Spock, about how Jim doesn't do relationships? I thought that simply a deduction made from his frequent superficial romantic engagements at the Academy. I'm pretty sure this comes from before the Academy. Like, way before." Spock frowns. "Clarify." The doctor shoves his hands in his pockets and lowers his voice. "Ew. You know Jim was on Tarsus, right?" Spock stares. McCoy huffs out a humorless laugh. "Yeah, he never told me the details, just the skin and bones of it." "Huh, skin and bones." He coughs. "Anyway, I'm no psychologist, but I'd bet my left nut all his issues, including this relationship phobia, come from that time." He looks up at Spock then, expression serious. "You might want to get in touch with Pike." Jim twists away and curls into himself as Spock wrestles him to the floor. The captain's wrists beneath his hands are bony, almost childlike. "Please, don't hurt me," he whispers. Vulcans do not get nervous. Spock is only half Vulcan. He tries not to stare at Jim all through the meal, but mostly he fails. The candlelight flickers across the captain's face, softening his features, making him look impossibly young and innocent, beautiful. Spock can't look away. Jim doesn't talk much. He seems distracted. Spock doesn't know why he keeps glancing at the door. He is glad for his preparation when Jim's eyes lighten briefly as Spock brings out the bottle of aged Earth wine. "Wow, Spock," Jim breathes, as the Vulcan carefully fills two glasses with the rich dark liquid. "That must have cost you a fortune." "The expense is of no matter," Spock answers, which is not quite a lie. In truth, he had to have the wine specially imported and shipped to the last starbase they docked at, and it actually cost him about a third of his monthly salary, but the money has no bearing when it makes Jim smile like that. They seat themselves on the couch in Spock's quarters. The conversation comes easy and casual, natural, as it always is. But then Jim mentions something about Neota, and Spock comments on something she once did while they had still been involved. And all of a sudden, it is like a wall comes up around the other man, invisible yet impossible to penetrate. "Jim?" Spock asks, when the captain glances around again, gaze lingering briefly on the exit. "Is something amiss?" Jim turns back to look at him, blue eyes bright in the half-darkness of the room. His grip around the wine glass is tentative, unsure. "What do you want, Spock?" he asks, with an uncertainty in his voice Spock has never heard. Spock swallows, summons his courage, and places a hand on Jim's thigh. The file Pike sends him is slim and economical. Spock sits at his desk and stares at the report. Winona Kirk arrested for the premeditated homicide of Kodos the Executioner. Suspect was convicted after only 30 minutes of jury deliberation. Sentence, 25 years to life in a maximum security prison colony. Kirk confessed that her motive for the murder was Kodos's alleged sexual exploitation of her son during the Tarsus IV disaster. Spock drops the pad. "He hurt him," Winona murmurs, and the anger in her is like a wave in inferno. "The bastard went after Jim like a predator, like a monster. He selected him. He groomed him with gifts and sweet nothings and all those innocent touches until they weren't innocent anymore, until he had Jim right where he wanted him." For the first time, her voice breaks, her expression cracks, and Spock sees it. The vulnerability, the grief, a mother who feels she has failed her child. "He hurt my son, so I killed him." When she cries, Spock feels the sting of tears in his own eyes. Spock swallows, summons his courage, and places a hand on Jim's thigh. Jim hits him. It's a half-hearted blow, more defense than offense. Spock recovers just as the captain bolts from the couch. And he gives chase without thinking about it, grabs Jim's wrist just as he takes one step toward the door. "Jim, wait." Jim cries out and strikes at him again. Spock ducks sideways to avoid the blow, but remembers too late. His grip on the other man, the momentum carries them both down in a tangle of limbs. Jim fights the entire way, movements animal and desperate. The pure, unadulterated terror in his eyes sending a spike of pain through Spock's heart. Confusion and hurt clog his throat. How did this go so wrong? Another wild flail, an attempt at escape, and Spock seizes Jim's other wrist. "Jim, please stop." Jim twists away and curls into himself as Spock wrestles him to the floor. The captain's wrists beneath his hands are bony, almost childlike. "Please, don't hurt me," he whispers. "May I stay with him?" Spock asks. McCoy sighs. "Sure, why not? He's out anyway." The doctor presses a hypo into Spock's hand and walks away. Spock approaches the biobed cautiously, but he needn't have bothered. Jim is clearly unconscious, lying still and pale beneath the sheets. His eyelids flutter, as if he is caught in some terrible feverish dream. Spock pulls a chair up to the side of the bed and eases himself into it. The hypospray hisses when he discharges it into his bloodstream, and a few seconds later, the ache in his head subsides. Feeling brave, Spock reaches out and gently wraps fingers around Jim's own, beneath the concealment of the blanket. This may be all he will ever get. "Please don't hurt me," he whispers. The world stutters to a halt. Spock stares down at him. What does that mean? Surely Jim doesn't think Spock would. And just like that, something dark and insidious begins to take hold in his heart. Then Jim moves sudden, sharp, and before Spock can stop him, before he can do anything, the wine bottle they'd knocked to the floor shatters against his skull. Everything goes black. They don't talk for 3 weeks. Spock feels miserable. Nyota keeps sending him sympathetic looks, and even McCoy acts softer around him, inquiring after his health at an almost alarming frequency. The atmosphere on the bridge becomes hushed and tense, and Spock's world tilts dangerously sideways every time he turns from his station to watch Jim's profile in the captain's chair and does not get a smile or even an acknowledgement in return. But he does nothing. Deep down, Spock knows what happened isn't his fault. He didn't know about Jim's past, didn't know what messages his own innocent behavior was sending. But it doesn't lessen the hurt. Spock aches for Jim, not because he feels responsible, but because his mate is hurting, and there is nothing Spock can do about it. Then one day it happens. During a particularly boring shift, Spock's pad pings and displays a request for an online chess game. Opponent, JTK. He swallows and looks toward the chair and nearly startles when he sees Jim looking right back at him. The captain's mouth curves slowly upward in an awkward smile. Spock's pad pings again, this time with the message, "I need a distraction." Shaking his head, Spock schools his controls to keep the smile from his own face as he accepts the invitation. Over the next week, they play 6 games via pad. Jim still doesn't talk to him, but things get easier. Spock even begins to think it will be enough. Then at the end of the week, Jim approaches him after shift. For an instant, Spock actually panics, finding himself at a complete loss as the captain walks up to him. He wants to grab Jim, pull him close, wrap his mate up in himself and never let go. He wants to run away to make sure he can never hurt Jim again. The two urges cancel each other out. He does nothing. Then Jim clears his throat. "So," he says, and shifts from one foot to the other. "I was thinking, what are you up to tonight?" Spock stares. The silence between them lengthens. The small tentative smile on Jim's face begins to falter. Then Nyota not so subtly kicks him on her way to the turbo lift, and Spock straightens up. "I do not yet have any set plans for the evening, Captain." Oh, great. Jim licks his lips, a very distracting movement. "That's great. So how about dinner then? Say my quarters in an hour?" And it's ridiculous, the relief and warmth that rush through Spock at the words, at the realization that Jim still wants this, still wants him. "Yes," he breathes. "Of course. The offer is very much appreciated." "Yeah, well," Jim shoves his hands into his pockets. His smile is lopsided but genuine. "I figured I could only run from this shit for so long, right? And if I'm ever going to try it with anyone, well..." He ducks his head a little, but his eyes are sincere. I'd like it to be you." And Vulcan logic be damned. The love and affection are too strong to contain. Spock feels the smile curve his lips and doesn't bother to stop it. "Please, don't hurt me," Jim whispers as they lie together later that night. Spock hums and gathers him closer. "Never," he answers, and basks in the fierceness of truth. The end.